What the hell's going on, folks? And welcome into episode 21 of the Bustin' Bubbles Outdoors Podcast. Hey, look here, before we get started rolling on this thing, y'all already know I got to give a big shout out to today's sponsor, Four Rivers Layout Boats. If you need a layout boat, if you need a new jet sled, you know, you want something American-made quality product, you already know to hit them boys up. I'm telling you right now. Great craftsmanship. If you mess something up, they can either fix it or send you something to fix it. And couldn't be a better couple of guys. They're made right up the road in Missouri. Y'all check them boys out. Also, got to give a shout to SX Decoys. I got some widgeon in the mail the other day from them over there. And out of all the decoys that I have, which is a good bit, the SX decoys definitely look the best. We're going to really see how they perform next duck season, but I'm telling you, I am excited to get them bad boys in the water. You already know, combatwaterfowl.com for all your sick fucking swag needs. You want some hats, you want some shirts, go on over there, combatwaterfowl.com. Turkey season is here. Y'all make sure y'all hit up bmifirearms.com. Get you a new turkey gun. Get you some turkey loads. Hell, get you some dove loads. It don't make a fuck. If you want it, they got it. Hit them boys up. You can use Bubbles5 at checkout over there. Also, at combatwaterfowl.com, use code JSnyder for a discount. And then with turkey season being here, y'all already know I'm rocking that Drake. Old Tom. I got that Old Tom vest. Good old Drake bottom land clothes. You know what it is. Hit up Drake. Just, it's that simple. You want good quality clothes. You want to be warm in the duck woods, in the deer woods. You know, you want to be dry in the turkey woods. Whatever the hell, they got it. Hit them boys up and ask me how you can get a discount for them as well. All right. We're going to jump right on in here with Brock from Four Rivers Layout Boats today. I sure hope y'all enjoy this episode, so we're going to roll into it.
What up?
No, that was not very hard.
No, it shouldn't have been.
No, I was waiting for it to pop up, you know, sign up for some shit, and then I was going to get spam mail.
I don't rightly know how it works on that other end, but from what everybody says, it ain't really hard, so.
Yeah, really all it asks is your name, and an email was optional, and that was it.
Oh, hell yeah. Shit. Well, so you didn't shoot no turkey this morning.
Dude, I should have never even bought my tags. That's what it's about coming down to.
Yeah.
Should have just kept on working. Kept my $18 and not even turkey hunted this year.
That ain't worth a fuck.
Not really.
Well, you can still go in the evenings after work, can't you?
Missouri just changed that this year. We used to be able to hunt till 1 o'clock, and now on private land you can hunt till sunset.
Okay. I thought it was sunset everywhere in Missouri now.
Mm-mm. Nope, just private. No, there's a lot of guys have mixed emotions for it, or about it, I guess I should say. Yeah, I don't know. I don't. It's nice if you find a bird or know where he's roosting and he's keeping the same pattern, you can get right on him. But
Well, that also gives guys like me and you opportunity to go out, you know, in the evening sometimes and shoot one, as opposed to, oh, well, I can't go in the morning because I got to work or I got to do this or got to do that. You know what I mean?
Kids, man, you're about to find out.
Oh yeah, it won't be long.
Wait till they get old enough for school, because it's get up, that's a whole nother job, or you know, one more thing you gotta prep for every day. So
luckily for me, I usually try to start my work day at 6, so as long as I can start my work day at 6, I ain't really got to worry about a whole lot of that, you know what I mean?
Oh, that mama bear do it all, huh?
Nah, I'll probably end up doing most of it.
You have to talk to the boss, see if you can start at 8.
I don't know about that. They like regular start time to be 7:30. When they cut overtime, that's what we go to is 7:30. But I'm trying to be in there at 6 working every day. Give me that overtime. Give me some money.
Overachiever.
I ain't an overachiever. I'm trying to be an over-earner. Shit, I'm trying to be like, what's that fella's name? Bill Gates.
Oh, bud. I don't even think he goes to work.
Yeah. What's work to him?
No joke.
Jesus Christ.
I ain't saying he didn't put it in at some point, but I guess now he's in the earned it stage.
Well, I guess better him than me. I like to think that way anyways. Well, what you been working on?
Well, we're trying to get our deer blinds wrapped up. That is the biggest thing. We did kind of a soft launch on deer blinds last year. And everything went pretty well, really, as far as the feedback from the guys that got them. We are adding a few more shelves to them. We have an archery one to come out with. As soon as I can tweak the molds for it. I think we're going to stick with the 6x6 rifle blind for this year. But you never know. Might get a wild hair and find some of that time that seems to be so, you know, it's lacking. Time is gone in my day-to-day life.
Right.
So, I guess I shouldn't say time, but free time or extra time is gone.
Right. I tell you, I've been seeing you post on Facebook and stuff where you're working on them shelves and all that. And should have a pretty big market for that, because Lord, all the people that deer hunt from everywhere, everybody wants a box blind. If they got private land, they want a shooting house, you know what I mean? Get up in there, get a little coffee can and the fire going and stay warm.
I hear you. I think we might be a little late to the game, but I'm going to try to put out a quality product at a blue-collar rate, you know, something everybody can afford.
Right. That's what it's all about.
So,
you know, everybody wants a quality product, but then most of this stuff you're getting, it's made super quick, you know, with bullshit materials from China or fucking Taiwan or some shit, slapped together with rivets, and then a year later it leaks and it ain't worth a fuck, you know?
Right. Yeah. I'm sourcing everything I can locally at the moment. Got some Amish people building our platforms for us. The windows are made in Texas, and we're making everything else right here in Missouri. So everything's – so far I had to source overseas and to be able to stay competitive. So we'll see how it goes.
Absolutely. Man, I tell you what, speaking of Amish, I've never – I've done a little bit of traveling before I moved up here, you know, but I've never seen, like, Amish folks, you know. Well, then I moved up here – and I've seen some Amish folks, you know, but it ain't the horse and buggy type Amish folks that I always think about when I think Amish. Well, the other day we had to go do a job in Trenton, and yeah, there was horse and buggies everywhere up that damn highway up there. I said, holy shit.
Yeah, there's a bunch up there. I mean, pretty well, if you go Trenton all the way straight east over here towards where I'm at, they're all over just north of me.
Man, I seen a horse pulling something down the road. I thought, what in the fuck is that? And I got up on it. I said, oh, damn, that's a buggy. It's a fancy buggy, but it's a buggy.
Yeah, there's you're seeing more and more of them here. The only downfall is they're coming in. We thought the city folk were bad about coming in and raising our land prices. Them Amish, they all gang up on you, and it don't matter what it that sells for an acre. If they want it, they're buying it.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Land, they'll pay whatever. So,
I don't know. I know down this way we've got some issues down 69 Highway. If you look at, like, on X and stuff, you'll see such and such incorporated or LLC or whatever, and it all tracks back to fucking China.
Yeah, that's – I know a lot of states have started passing a law now to make it where they can't purchase property.
They should. I tell you what, when I lived in Alabama, I had a buddy. I still got a buddy, but so this guy lived down the road from me about 40 minutes, okay? And they lived in one of them brand new subdivisions with like the nice brick houses and stuff, and their rent was like $1,300 a month. And this is 3 years ago, you know, and their air conditioning went out in like July or August, and it's hot as shit down there that time of year. Well, he's calling his leasing people, you know, trying to figure out, hey, who's going to fix my air conditioner? When's it going to get fixed? I got an old lady and two kids. You know, it's too hot for this. Well, they informed him that they couldn't just go and fix it, that they had to talk to the owner of the house who lived in fucking India to see if he would pay for it. That's fucking ridiculous. We ought not have shit like that.
I think I've been looking for a new lease at that point, I can tell you that.
I'd have been raising 600 hills, you know. I tell you what. But I tell you what, dude. You know, that sled I got from you the other week, that son of a bitch is huge. And we excited to get out and start using that thing here in a couple weeks when it gets warm enough. I got a couple of spots with some trees in it, and I'm going to go crappie fishing. And I think I'm going to put my bucket down in the sled and put a few other things in it and go walking through them trees. I am very glad that I drove the work truck up there to pick that thing up, because when I got back to the shop and put it in my truck, it was longer than my truck bed.
what a lot of people don't realize about that thing, and it's mainly due to my lack and Tom's even in the past. Now, not to hate on Tom, but nobody realized that it doubles as a cockpit cover for the refuge runner and EBADS. I do got to go in and make a couple changes because Tom did not design it where to go over the hinges for your doors.
Uh-huh.
So I've got to go add a couple pieces where to step over your hinges. That way you don't have to take your hinges off to put the cover on. But then, you know, to winterize it or whatever, or even going down the road, whatever you want to do, you just throw it on there and strap it over, and you got a cockpit cover. So you can throw all your decoys right in your layout boat, throw the sled upside down, and you got everything you need to go right there.
That's insane. I tell you what, that thing is going to come in very handy because late season this year we were running migrator spreads because the birds just got to where they didn't want to come into two dozen, three dozen, dozen and a half, you know. So we was throwing 7-8 dozen decoys, and I'd put, you know, fuck, 5 dozen in that small sled I had and put the other 2 dozen in a bag. Where now I got a feeling I ain't going to have to do that because I put that bag with the 2 dozen in it in that sled, and it don't take up no room. So I'm stoked about that to get that thing out next year and really put it through the wringer, you know.
Right. I mainly used ours for our goose spreads. You get a muddy field or something, you load up the back of the UTV and then also pull some in the sled. So you're not pulling a trailer or anything out there to – you know, destroying somebody's property. I mean, we're row crop farmers ourselves, and I guarantee if I drive through on our properties, my grandpa will let me know about it. So, but I want to take that sled at some point and cut them in half and put them back together and make a mega sled that is used to pull behind a UTV, but also fit, you know, have the same width of like your UTV wheelbase so it still fit on your trailer right behind it.
Instead
of having to pull the trailer out there, you can just load this mega sled up and pull your decoys out. So if you are in, you know, if you got a lot of snow or it is muddy or something, you can still get out there, throw you some Gator Glide or Wetlander or some of that anti-friction stuff on the bottom and you know, get your spread out there without having to tear everything up.
I'm actually thinking about throwing Gator Glide on it now because early season teal a lot of the places we hunt for teal early season is you got a long walk over land to get there. You know what I mean? You don't just pull up and drop right in the water. You're dragging through grass, gravel, all kinds of stuff. So I'm thinking about putting some of that on there now just to make that September haul a little bit easier.
Dude, I would. That stuff is awesome. It's just crazy what it does. Like, say you put it on the bottom of a boat and you're going through the marsh. You're on the water, you go through some vegetation, whether it be lily pads or some grass of some sort or whatever you may go across, some kind of vegetation, you will actually pick up speed going across the vegetation.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
Dude, I've always heard from a number of folks that that gator glide is the business right there. That's good stuff, but I did not know that it would pick up speed in a boat going across vegetation and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it does nothing for the water. I mean, it ain't getting, you know, anti-friction in the water, but when you, like I said, if you go through some lily pads or something, anything, you'll go faster.
Oh, dude, that's freaking sick.
Yeah.
So, with you being the main owner in Four River Layout Boats, I got some question about layout boats to mainly for me, but for everybody listening as well, because I'm a little retarded when it comes to that stuff because I've never done that kind of hunting. What do you see in your layout boats? What do you see folks doing most? Like, how are folks utilizing those most over anything else?
Well, you still got a broad answer for that. I've took and hunt them in an open water. We got to Jersey and hunt, and I've hunted out in the middle of the ocean with them, with our little teal chasers. No cover, nothing, literally laying there and shooting divers and brant, squall, anything you could get out there. I say in the ocean, it's kind of intercoastal stuff, still saltwater marsh stuff. But, you know, you're sitting wide open, no cover. I don't even have a cover or doors on the boat. So the sky's the limit with these things. You know, here local, here in North Central Missouri, we got a lot of public. You got Fountain Grove, Grand Pass, you know, Nottoway Valley, Bob Brown. I mean, there's public access all over here. If you're lucky enough to draw in, you know, even if you are going to somewhere that has a pit blind with a mound, there's a lot of times I'd utilize the layout boat. You know, if the wind is, maybe you don't get a good draw, you don't get a good pill. And the wind's wrong for that blind. Pull the layout boat up to the back of the blind mount, and hopefully there's some open water and with a favorable wind. And use the boat versus the blind. And I think you set up totally opposite, then the birds are even less leery. You know, yeah, it sucks because those birds do get pressured, and you still have the big blind mount there, but you're giving them something totally different than instead of sitting in the big open pool in the front, you have some ducks scattered out in the back of the mound in some smaller pots of water, you know, maybe some, you know, a dozen ducks here, a dozen ducks there, or decoys, I guess I should say, you know, kind of spread stuff up instead of 5-10 dozen out in the middle of one big pool. You've got them kind of in a few little pots and like a boat lane or something a little different, and they seem to tend to hone in on that. Then you got guys also hunting, we now have some big boats, so they're hunting big open water with, we got a boat almost up to 18 foot. We got a 17 foot 10. But that's kind of off subject of the layout boat style. So I guess I'll jump back to the layout boat style. And then getting into places nobody else can go. That is the main goal. We have a lot of guys that are buying these right now, and they're telling us that what they're doing is they're trying to get up into these little tributaries to the big water. So say you have a big reservoir or something you're hunting, and, you know, you got all these tributaries that's running into it. Well, they're going back up, you know, however many hundred yards, mile, whatever, however far back up in it they're going, where these ducks, these pressureds are staying up off the big water. They're staying in this little pothole, and they are running up through inches of water to get where these ducks are. And they're seeing that as far as people using them right now, that's one of the main ways I'm seeing them used, which is cool, which is kind of the whole goal, is to get where other people can't.
Right.
And you get these pressure birds, they get it figured out. Well, we just made it where they can't figure it out. So
I tell you what, that's a good thing about them, is that you can get to places where somebody in their, you know, 1852, whatever duck boat that daddy paid for can't get to, you know, and you can also get those places where old Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know, oh, I'm a fat fuck, I don't want to walk 400 yards through the woods to get this hole, let me hunt out here on this main water. You can also get back there without having to put in as much effort, you know.
Yeah.
Something
go ahead.
something that really strikes me is, like, I see, like, the Pit Boss Waterfowl, I think that's who it is, like, his videos and stuff, and other guys' videos on Instagram and stuff, and they're hunting, like, layout boats, but they don't have them grassed in and stuff. But I'm always like, aren't you supposed to be grassed in? Like, but then with these layout boats on the big water, it seems like they're not grassed in. They're still shooting just as many ducks, you know?
Yeah, no, they're so the style of layout boat you're seeing, like Jeff Coates them use, what they call it, a pumpkin seed. So it's kind of made to be low profile to blend in with the waves.
Mm-hmm.
And really, once you get down that low, you're hard to pick out. Especially, you know, they're hunting that big open water, and you're just in this little round boat with some gang lines running off you and shooting divers.
Right.
And they have no idea.
I tell you, there's some places here that I think some stuff like that would really come in handy, because there's a couple of lakes close to me that you can go out and you can hunt around the bank and you can have some success, or you can go off into the little creeks and have some success and whatnot. But you'll just sit and watch thousands of birds out in the middle of the big water all day. They'll pick up, they'll fly off for about 30 minutes, and then they'll come back and land, and they'll do the same thing, you know, just constant. I'm like, man, I think a layout boat or something of the sort would be, like, perfect out there.
Dude, people thought I was crazy back when I started doing this. This is before I ever had thought about purchasing Four Rivers Company. I had a refuge runner, and a couple of my buddies had minis, and I think the other one had a refuge runner. And we would go – we got some reservoirs around here that for every city has its own little reservoir pretty well. They pump their water for the town. And we would go out and daisy chain them together, hook them together side to side, kind of like you're hunting layout blinds hub to hub.
Mm-hmm.
We'd take them grassed in and all and put them out in the middle of the water, you know, side to side, and shoot ducks that were landing within 5 yards. I mean, I'm talking open water. You just look like a big, long island, I guess, really.
Right. You
know, a 13-foot by, I don't know, 15-foot island.
That's insane. It's...
And we did this, we generally do it in teal season, but we were shooting teal and they were landing back in the boat with us.
No kidding.
Yeah, coming right in. You were shooting ducks that, I'm not even joking, some of the ducks we shot, we should have missed. They were so close.
We did that a couple of times last year. You know, usually in teal season, we're not carrying a whole lot of, you know, water, decoys, and some snacks. And we're cutting stuff to build blinds with out there, just because it's usually, you know, 90-something degrees, hot as shit.
Yeah.
Who wants to be out there dragging all that out in September? So we'll just go and build a blind. And we had some this year that I don't know how we shot them, but they were, like, in our face. I shot one at 8 yards, and it pretty much blew most of the breast off of it. I mean, it was insane.
Yeah. Yep.
But, so with your layout boats, when you're building them, do you put your loops and stuff on them for grass, or do you have a system that you put on them for that, or is it like an optional, hey, spend, you know, $50 more and you can get this to go on your boat to put all your grass on? Like, how does that all work?
So we set all of our boats up pretty well a la carte. If that's what you want to call it, you get to choose what you want on it. So you can buy just the bare boat, which we have a lot of guys that buy just the bare boat, take it home, do their own DIY stuff. You know, so I've seen a lot of guys use snow fence to make their grass, stubble for their grass. We offer a blind cover and door system. You can get long or short doors. We got dog blind. You also got the boat cover, and they come with sewn on stubble straps. And the thing I like about that, now I'm not knocking on the guys that DIY it. I get it. It's fun. You get to build your own boat, and you got something. You got, you know, we get you started, and you can finish your boat in kind of a DIY. You know, it's yours then.
Right.
But the good thing, or the nice thing, I guess I should say, about our cover and doors is, in the summer, you want to fish, whatever, you few turn buttons, pop it off, pull the release pins on the doors, and you can go fishing. And then your grass is literally still on there for next year, unless you're one of those guys that grass it up every year. But I just go buy some raffia and zip tie them on, and my boat's good till, you know, 4 or 5 years later.
Right. Okay. Well, how does what's your busy time of year? About this time, you know, late spring, summer?
No, usually about the end of January we get slow, and then as soon as turkey season's over, it's just a flood. Everybody calls, and it's funny, we get a lot of guys that call us and say the end of January when we are going into our slow time, and we'll be like, hey, they're like, what's the lead time? You know, a month right now. Okay, I'll call you back in September. No, don't call back in September because our lead time is going to be 4 to 6 months in September.
Right.
And it never fails. They call back September. Hey, we called you January, and said your lead time's a month. I need to get that boat ordered. Season starts, you know, 3 weeks.
Right.
Well, hate to tell you, bud, but you missed it. You know, some of them, you're like, I know, I should have ordered it. And other guys seem to get frustrated, but I mean, I make them in order. I'm sorry. I've had numerous people offer, you know, hey, I'll give you another $1,000 if you move me up to the top line. No, sir, I apologize. Johnny, that ordered ahead of you, wants his boat just as bad as you do. And Johnny apparently or may not have the $1,000 to throw at me. And that's just the way I look at it. It's a first come, first serve. I appreciate the offer, but I'm not going to cut somebody else's throat just because you waited.
Right. I tell you what, it's good to do it that way. You know, I think because that shows, okay, well, I ordered something, you know, I want it as quick as possible, as opposed to, oh, well, I'm going to tell you, you can have it by this time, but then, well, sorry, we had some stuff come up, blah, 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 which, I mean, stuff like that still happens, you know what I mean, especially having a family, having a wife, having kids and stuff, but you don't want to just drag somebody out, and then all of a sudden it's 3 months later, hey, I thought you said I was going to have my shit by now, and then, you know.
Right, man, and I feel that brings up a really good point, because our cover and doors, and it's another thing I don't think a lot of people realize. You go look at Momarsh, which would be our biggest competitor. Their stuff is imported from overseas. You order it, they're literally slapping a label on a box and shipping it out.
Right.
And I get it. They have stock, and they can do that. But I don't think anybody realized how small we truly are. We have two ladies that sew for us. This last year, one got cancer and put us down to one. And it was right there when everybody's ordering stuff, September, October. And I think everybody and their dog replaced their boat cover and doors this year. It was, I think, the most we've ever sold ever. As far as replacement covers and doors. And to be honest, with the lady getting ill due to cancer and being gone, we are just now, honestly, filling some of the orders from the end of last year. We got flooded. And it's doesn't look bad from a business standpoint, I'm sure. But where I'm at, I can't find nobody to sew. You try getting these younger kids to learn how, and nobody wants to work. So we're actually getting some older retired ladies that are, you know, looking for another source of income, and they come in and they work for us.
I think a lot of the problem with like the younger kids and stuff too, man, is they don't want it. You know what I mean? You look at a lot of folks from like my generation and stuff. They don't care. They've had everything handed to them. You know, why should I go out and learn something when, you know, this person's sitting here making this much money doing nothing, you know, and it ain't about that. You know, you got to want it at some point. And just a lot of folks just don't want it.
Right. Yeah, that's a whole other subject, because I could go off on the younger generation as far as their work ethic and drive these days. It's not there. It is sad to see. I'm hoping I raise my kids right to, you know, work for what they have. I know everybody's so excited, their parents buy them their first car. Well, my dad didn't give me that opportunity. He said, hey, I own a lawn care company. You're 14. You better get out here, because you're going to be 15 and start, you know, you get your permit in Missouri at 15. He said, you better find you a vehicle to start practicing in.
Right. So
he didn't give me the option. He said, get out here and work. And, you know, I bought my first truck when I was 14 and a half so I could start driving when I was 15. That's the way he wanted it done, you know. If this is what you're going to be driving when you're 16, I want you to be comfortable in it. This is what you're going to learn in. And, you know, he put me to work to buy it, and I pretty well worked. You know, I was still young in high school and had sports and whatnot, but weekends, 3 o'clock, you got out of basketball practice at 5, well, sorry, bud, but there's 3 hours of daylight left, and you better guarantee my dad was making sure I was there.
Absolutely. No, my dad bought me my first truck, but it was right when I started driving. I was working. You know, there wasn't none of this shit. Oh, well, you want to go do something Friday night, Saturday night? Well, all right, here's $200. It was not. If you want to have money, you want to go do stuff. You know, I bought the truck. I'll pay for your insurance, but you better go out and work for what you want. You know, and growing up, I saw my dad work three jobs the whole time I was growing up. My mom always worked. And, you know, I don't want to put my kids in a position to, oh, well, we didn't have this or we didn't have that. You know, that wasn't an option. It was, I want to be able to give my kids the things that they want, you know what I mean, the things that they need, and then also still instill a work ethic in them, you know.
Right.
I feel like just so many people these days don't do that. They raise their kid, you know, I'll work my ass off to get where I'm at, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm going to hand everything to my kid, and then they're not going to work for shit ever. Yeah. I don't know, man. And I think a lot of folks are just fucking plain out lazy, too. You know, there's folks that are able to get out and work, could work, no problem, and just want to sit around and be a piece of shit, you know?
I can't knock the lazy part too much. I'm pretty lazy, but I still somehow find time to get stuff done. So, I don't know what I have going on, but I seem to balance my lazy work ethic pretty well.
I mean, I have my days, but you still got to get work done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of another thing that sucks, too, with what we do is, you know, there's so many variables that affect how quick our gel coat and resin dry. So if there's a bunch of humidity, it's going to dry slow. If it's cold, it's going to dry slow. You know, even if it's windy, say we have the shop open, the wind to dry the boat quicker. So it's funny, every day, I might as well plan on a text every day for my wife at 3 o'clock. How's it coming? Well, I really don't know. When 5 o'clock rolls around and I'm home, it went well. When, you know, 6, 7, 8 o'clock rolls around and I'm home, it didn't go as well. So, and that's the thing that sucks, you know, especially with these boats. When you start, you can't stop. You know, you just can't shut the machine off and pick up where you left off the day before. Or, you know, it's not going to bond. It's not going to adhere and bond right. And you're going to have a problem. And, you know, that's the thing that sucks. You know, my wife really looks at me having an 8 to 5. And there's no such thing as an 8 to 5 in my world.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, that goes back to quality, you know. Hey, I could probably do this and take a break, you know, get off at this time, but it's going to affect the quality.
Yeah, it's going to protect me, prevent me from something getting done on time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I tell a guy, hey, your boat will be ready to pick up Monday, and it's Thursday, and I still haven't got it done. And I just quit. And then here he comes Monday. Don't tell me I haven't done this. I've done it. This is speaking from experience. Here comes Monday, and John Boy's on his way to the shop, and we are trying to finish buttoning this thing up, and he's going to be there at 2 o'clock, and noon rolls around, and he walks in, and you're like, shit. You know, I got to finish putting these covers and doors on and, you know, his HEN number and get his paperwork done. You know,
right.
It falls back on us to an extent. I mean, yeah, he did me wrong. They say they showed up 2 hours early, but you know, I should have had it done Friday versus, you know, trying to button it up at Monday at noon. So it happens. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm a terrible procrastinator. I will set stuff off to the side and, you know, I know it's there and I know it needs to get done. It's just my plate is always full. It's like going to the buffet, Cracker Barrel, and trying to decide what to eat first. And you'll get that plate, and you look at it, and you're like, that's not what I want. So you slide it to the side, and you go get you another plate. When by the time you eat that second plate, you really don't want to go back to that first plate. You're full now.
Yeah.
So here you are trying to, manage, tough through eating that first plate that you already filled. And that's probably a pretty good explanation of owning a business. The, plate's always full, and sometimes you have more than one plate.
Right. I tell you what, going off of that, I don't know that I've ever been full off of one plate from a buffet. Normally, if we go to the buffet, my big ass ain't going to eat for much of the day. That way I'm good and hungry, so I can go in there and get my money's worth.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I guess I wouldn't have any other way if I wasn't – if I didn't even have a plate – I'd have nothing to eat, so.
Absolutely.
I'm just lucky I got a plate to eat off of.
Absolutely. There's always somebody out there less fortunate, What, can you talk about a little bit how you build your boats? I don't know if that's something you really want to get into or not because of, competitors hearing or whatever, but, if you can, I'm interested. I'm sure a lot of other folks will be interested to hear, the process that goes into it.
Yeah, I ain't too, ain't too worried about it. Every boat's pretty well built the same from, our little 10-foot, 9-foot, all the way up to, say, a Phoenix bass boat. They're all essentially the same. So a lot of people – what's funny is a lot of people don't realize they're actually built in reverse. So you spray your gel coat first, which would be like your paint, if you want to look at it that way. You mm-hmm. spray your gel coat first, it's got a cure. And once it gets to a certain point, it'll still be like a little bit on the tacky side, I guess you could say. That's when your resin is going to adhere the best because your gel coat still has a little bit of cure left. And then you're coming and putting this resin on it. So that'll make it bond even better. That's what I was saying earlier about, when the wife asks how my day's going, I don't know. I just gel coated these boats. They got to get chopped and you got to do it at the right time. So if they're curing slow, my day's going to be long. So once you come in, you come through and wet it out with resin. A lot of people frown up on the chop gun. It's a chopped boat. It's junk, yada, yada. We use chop, and I'll explain why we use chop, I guess, or the reason chop is actually beneficial. So we'll come through and put our chop down and roll all that out, and then we have a woven mat that we come in and put, and that's where our strength comes from. But you want that chop under there because it helps feather everything out. So if, say, you do have a run in your gel coat, like maybe you messed up with the gun and made a run in it, or, something just didn't go right in the base layer, you can take this chop and feather everything out so it's smooth. So when you do lay the mat, you're not going to have a void or an air bubble in between, like, where the run is high versus the normal thickness gel coat. You would have an air bubble there at all times. If you would never get it rolled out, you can't roll it out. So you put the chop down first. That gives you pretty well, a new playing field to start off. Everything's on the same level and you can come in and lay your mat down, and that's where your strength comes from. And then what we do is we come back and chop over the end of that to pretty well the same reason as your mat is, you cut it with scissors. So you have kind of a hard line anywhere, like say you have a seam or, you got two layers here and a layer here. So we come back and chop it in the end to feather all that out. So you're not seeing all those hard lines of the edges of your mat. A lot of people say, oh, it's a chopped boat. Is it? To an extent, yes. You do have two layers of chop, but it's there to make a clean and better product, to be honest.
Is chop that real rough fiberglass looking stuff?
Chop comes out of the gun. We got a big gun that sprays resin, and then it's got a wheel that chops up the, you got big spools of fiberglass, and it shoots off and it mixes in the air, and then you roll it. And now the big spools, what you're talking about is probably a mat. We have three different mats we use depending on where it's needed in the application. We got different thicknesses or grades, whatever you want to call it. So.
Okay. Hell yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So what? Like I said, a lot of people just think they're chop boat, but the chop is there for a reason. Like I I don't post a lot of the mat stuff online just so nobody knows, like, oh, okay, well, they're running, you know, this piece of mat here or this piece of mat there. Noted, you know. I will post videos of the chop, and I think that's where a lot of people think, well, they're just making chop boats. No, we're not just making chop boats. Yes, that is a part of the process.
Well, here's the thing, you know, folks can say what they want. You know, oh, you're making a chop boat, you're doing this, you're doing that. Four Rivers has been around for a long time, and Four Rivers is a very big name, and it's that way for a reason. You know, it ain't because y'all are making shit products. It ain't because Tom was making shit products. Obviously, you're doing something right.
Yeah, I believe this is the 27th year. I'd have to start it in 90, or no. Yeah, 94, I believe.
Shit, now that's older than... It's older than that because I was born in 97. I'm 26, 27.
Yeah, I don't know when they officially started Four Rivers. That's what I'm trying to they made some boats off of, so back up a little bit, I guess. A guy made from Four Rivers, that's where the name came from. He was a Four Rivers Conservation Area agent, and he made a couple glass over wood boats. And brought them up to a company called Kitco, which I would like to get Tom on here and go over a podcast of all the original stuff, so I'll keep this loose. But and they pulled molds off these boats. And that was in the 90s. And then I don't know when Four Rivers officially started.
Right, but
I know we celebrated 25 years, and that was either last year or the year before. Time flies by anymore, so I don't remember.
Right. Either way, it just goes to say Four Rivers has been around for a long time. You know, obviously, if y'all were making shit products, you wouldn't have as big a name in the industry as you do. Because everybody, when they talk about boats, everybody talk about Four Rivers. You know, it's always a name brought up in the conversation. So, obviously, if folks want to bitch about you using chop or whatever, fuck them. Because at the end of the day, you know, you're putting your time into it. Levi's putting his time into it. Y'all are making a quality product, and it's handmade, you know. Regardless of what people say, a lot of folks don't want some piece of fucking plastic coming from goddamn Chinming in China off a damn assembly line. You know, they want to know that they have quality. You know, if you can go back to having a personal relationship with somebody over, oh, hey, we're this big corporate company, buy our stuff. I'm going to go, me and I know a lot of other folks are going to go with somebody they have a personal relationship with that they can call up, hey, I'm having this problem. You know, what do you recommend? Something like that. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's like I said earlier, I think, you know, everybody looks at Momarsh now. They got bought out by, was it Higdon?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think Higdon bought them out. I don't remember who it is. I don't stay in the loop. But Higdon owns them now. And I guess somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, that's a big company. So everybody looks and they're comparing us to Momarsh. And now you see Momarsh, they got the dog blinds. They got the Invisalign. I don't even like an Invisalign layout. I don't know what all they have. Like I said, I don't stay up with them, but you know, they got a whole array of stuff, and they were our biggest competitor ever, so everybody compares us apples to apples. Layout boat-wise, I would say apples to apples, we are or were pretty similar. And Momarsh just happened to take off. You know, they had the capital to do it with Ira being a veterinarian and Tom being a layout boat maker, I guess. That's just... You know, they had the capital to expand, and Tom didn't.
Right.
So I think everybody still tries to compare us to this day to that level, where they grew into other niches, and we're still in the boats. So, and I think that's something a lot of our customers don't realize. You know, like I said, their covers are coming from China. Ours is coming from our 1.5 sewing ladies when the other lady's filling up the par to come in. You know.
Right.
So.
Again, hand quality personal relationship for me anyways over any of that other bullshit. But you also do other things other than layout boats. You've got Call for Life lanyards and Call for Life custom engraving, correct?
Yeah, it's Custom for Life engraving and the lanyards. So lanyards is actually what got me started. I used to go, there used to be a calling competition, the Mississippi Valley Calling Classic in Burlington, Iowa. Used to be a real big calling classic. It ain't even around no more. I went up there with a buddy of mine that called in the competitions back in the day. And I want to say Tom was there, but I didn't know Tom at this point. I hadn't really got to talk to him. But the guy that I went to the calling contest with, his brother was making lanyards. And I hunted a lot. Dad owned a lawn care company. So in the winter, if it didn't snow, I had nothing to do.
Right.
We were fixing the mowers up or whatever. So I hunted all, I mean, out of a 60-day duck season, I bet I hunted 50 of them. I literally used to hunt every day unless I just could not make it. And so I was buying lanyards off this guy's brother. And I was like, I could surely do this. So I just sat down and started making the lanyards. And the first ones were just total crap, you know. But I started selling a few here locally to my buddies. They're like, oh, hey, yeah, that's kind of cool. Make me one in this color. So I'd buy a little, you know, 50-foot Hank offline, a 50-foot Hank of paracord off. I don't even know if Amazon was around back in 2014. I'm sure it was. But anyway, I'd buy it from, you know, wherever I could buy it online. Survival Packs used to be the company I bought it off of. And, you know, I'd make them whatever color they wanted. And then I got to talking with Tom. He was looking for a slogan for their layout boat company, for his layout boat company, and it had closed the little pole he had. And I was like, hey, have you thought about this one? He's like, oh, I already chose one, but I like that, but sorry, I already chose one. I was like, oh, hey, I get it. By the way, I need to order a refuge runner. And that kind of was what got Tom and I started. So I got this refuge runner, and I hunted out of it for 3 or 4 years, but in those three, you know, I picked up the boat. Probably a year later, Tom was going to an expo. It was the John A. Logan Outdoor Expo. I think it was in Carbondale, Illinois, if I remember right. I mean, I'm talking 13, 14 years ago, so my memory's pretty gone now. I said, hey, Tom, do you care? Do you need help with that show, or do you want somebody to ride with you, or you care if I go? Pretty well invited myself, you know?
Like, yeah.
And then Tom was kind enough. I was like, oh, hey, by the way, I got these 20 lanyards I made. Can I hang them at the booth? And, you know, again, I threw myself up on Tom, and he's like, yeah, sure, go ahead. Well, I hung them up, and they were gone within 20 minutes. No joke. And Tom looks at me, goes, what are you going to do now? I said, well, I guess I'm going to sell boats. I said, I'm out of lanyards. I guess I made my money, and I guess I better help you because that's what I came for. He started laughing, you know. But that's where that all kind of started. And then when I sold those lanyards in, you know, minutes, I was like, okay, I got to get something going here. So I started Call for Life. Well, I got to talking to Tom because he had done a few shows. I was like, hey, what do you think about traveling for these expos? He's like, oh, I'm down if you want to go. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I started buying booth space for the lanyard company, and Tom, we traveled together.
Mm-hmm.
I bet from 2015 up until he kind of started slowing down in 20. He was kind of slowing down on the boats and stuff, which is when we ended up purchasing it. But we traveled. I lived at Tom's house all through the summer. And, we'd come home 2, 3, 4 days, depending on how far we had to drive. Come home, he'd load up another batch of boats. I would sit on his couch and make lanyards to try to restock for the next show. And I knew somewhere back in there, 10 years ago, I told him, hey, if you ever want to sell Four Rivers, let me know. And unfortunately, here we are, I guess. I shouldn't say unfortunately, but the reason I'm saying unfortunately is because I was working for BNSF at the time on the railroad, and I got furloughed. And he's like, hey, I'm looking to sell. Are you interested in buying? I said, yeah. I mean, I that was kind of the whole plan, you know, 10 years ago or whatever it was. And I said, but I just got furloughed. I don't plan on spending any extra money at the moment. And he told me a price. I was like, yeah, I don't know. He goes, well, I got one of the guys that's wanting it. I said, go ahead and talk to him and let me know. And I told the wife, I said, well, Tom's wanting to sell. I don't want to spend no money. I'm furloughed. Not that I couldn't go back to work for dad. I can still go mow, but, you know, I was like, I don't want to spend no extra money at the moment. We had our first kid and had got married not too long before that in a house, and bills were coming in, you know. We yeah. was a still a young family. And I wasn't looking to drop money on a business like that. And a week or two went by, and he calls me back. He said, hey, that guy don't want to do it. And Paige looked at me, and she's like, you're buying it. And I was like, what? She goes, yeah, you're not turning it down twice. I was like, okay, I guess if the wife's on board, Tom, we'll take it. So I guess I got to remember that next time she asked me what time I'm going to be home. That's, you know, you just made me think of that. Next time she asks at 3 o'clock, how's it going? I just got to remind her that she told me not to pass it up twice. So that just brought up the best idea ever. It'll still backfire on me, I promise. When I tell her that, it's going to be, you know, your supper being the microwave. You know, she's still going to let me know she would rather be home at 5, but she gets it. You know, just yesterday, we had to go work Saturday. And they was making dinner. And she's like, hey, have you ate? I said, I ain't ate lunch. I ain't ate nothing. She's like, well, I'll load the kids up and bring you dinner. So she brought Levi and I dinner. And, you know, she supports me, even though she don't really want to admit it. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's a good old lady to have.
Right. Yeah. She'll put on her front to anybody else, but deep down, you know, she appreciates it.
Yeah, that's kind of my old lady in a sense, you know. During duck season when I'm out, you know, so I work pretty well Monday through Friday. Every once in a while, we'll have to work a Saturday. Friday afternoon, I'll come home and eat supper, and I'm loading the truck. You know, I'm putting this in the truck, getting that in the truck, cleaning this gun, you know, making sure this is ready to go, that's ready to go, and I'll get in bed at 11 o'clock. When 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning rolls around, I'm up going down the highway, and she's, oh, I hate duck season, this and that, but then at the same time, she's like, if that's what you want to do, you know, you got to do it. You got to do what you want to do. You can't not do it. So I'm very fortunate in that aspect as well.
I'd be pissed. That's just like I bought my turkey tags yesterday afternoon and went turkey hunting. I'd been in the shop for weeks, and I'm pretty well on weekends and everything. Now, we did have a wedding, but I wouldn't call that any me time. You know, that was we had to do. But other than that, we're in the shop, or I'm doing paracord on the weekend. And I really don't take no me time. And finally, just finally builds up. And I'm like, I got to go do something. Like, whether with the kids, or with, like, the kids love, we'll go drive around looking for deer or turkeys, you know. We'll just drive.
Yeah.
Which is nice. You time it just right. You go, you know, of an evening. You'll figure this out. You go of an evening, they'll pass out. And you can come back home and get some chores you need to get done, whether it be laundry or dishes or, you know, that pile of clothes that you've left there all week. Because you're literally working from the time you wake up. And you're passed out as soon as you walk through the door. It's all you got to kick your shoes off before you hit the bed.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You get them to – just wait, man. I know you only got one, but it takes up a lot of your time. I mean, do I regret any of it? No, but, you know, the little things that were easy in the past are gone.
Right. Yeah, and I hear that we ain't going to be getting a whole lot of sleep that first year or two, which, you know – It is what it is. You know, if I don't get no sleep, oh well. I'll get it sometime, but
yeah,
it kind of is what it is.
You learn to run on nothing.
Yeah, I tell you what, I used to be that way working at the plant before I moved up here. It was a lot of 7 days, you know, every day going to work, not having days off, work 6-7 months straight. And it was a lot of that then, you know, running off of nothing. I'm tired as fuck, but
yep,
got to go to work. You know, got to get this done, got to get that done.
Like, so I said, I was working for the railroad, so you would go sit on a train for 14 hours, not knowing how long you'd been up in the hotel. You got called, you know, you may sit there six, seven, you know, you get in, you go sleep for 10 hours, wake up, you may sit in the hotel for 6, 7 hours or 8 hours again before they call you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're on a train for 14 hours. So next thing you know, you've been up 22 hours. Then you get to the depot, you got to tie up. And then you get home, you're pushing, you know, 23 to 24 hours of being awake.
Right.
And you get home, say it's midday on a Saturday, and you got the wife and kids, they don't want you to go to bed. So, I mean, that's – the railroad taught me a lot about how to run on lack of sleep, and I'm fairly good at it now. I get my sleep a lot better than I did when I was on the railroad, but 3 o'clock, between 1 to 3, I'm generally awake every day. So
– I don't have very many days – I didn't have very many days where I just didn't get no sleep when I was working at the plant. And I don't have very many of those days now. But when I get the least sleep, it's probably during duck season just because. And, you know, there's days where Sunday, so I'll get out and I'll hunt Saturday, get home 2, 3 o'clock and take a little nap, get up and eat supper and go to bed. Well, Sunday, I'll do the same thing, excuse me, but I won't take a nap. And it'll be time to go to bed, and it's sitting there, you know, laying there staring at the ceiling. Man, why did this group of birds not do it today? Why did that group of birds not do it today? What should I have done different in that situation, you know?
Yeah, and that's – and I can tell you probably why I'm waking up. You know, I go to bed at 10 o'clock. I wake up generally between 1 and 3, and it's usually because one of the kids that got up went to the bathroom or – you just not want to stay in their own bed or whatever. And then as soon as I'm awake, my mind starts going a million miles an hour. Oh, this customer messaged me. Did I check this email? This hasn't shipped, that hasn't shipped. Well, what's my plan for tomorrow? You know, it never ends. And that's what keeps me awake more than anything is my mind. It just gets all the time.
It gets bad for me like that when if I hadn't done anything in a while, you know, if I've just been going to work, coming home, sitting around the house, not doing nothing, then I'll wake up and I'm like, okay, I got to go do something. I've got to go do something or I'm going to lose my freaking mind, you know. So it's different, you know, a little different from what you're saying, but I know how you feel in some of that aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I could wake up in my mind be wondering why a group of birds didn't work. But instead, I wonder if there's birds flying or what's going on outside because I'm stuck in a shop. And that brings me back to another point. Like I said, I used to hunt 50-some days a year. I mean, that's just ducks. You got to add geese. I was hunting probably 60-something days a year because our goose season runs until February.
Mm-hmm.
So I was probably hunting about 60 days a year. And now I'm lucky to hunt. I think last year we hunted twice.
No kidding.
Yep. And it's funny. It is the funniest thing. Our customers will call, oh, hey, I'm sure y'all just, you know, just smacking the shit out of ducks right now. No, I couldn't identify a duck at the moment. So,
yeah,
you know, and it's everybody just thinks we live this glorious life of we build duck boats. So that must be what we do all day. You know, when during season we hunt every day. That's by far nowhere near the truth. I do see some of our competitors that are out there. They get to hunt. It must be nice. That's all I can tell you. It must be nice.
Right. I'll say that I'm fortunate enough to, you know, when I'm working and stuff, I still get to get out a good bit. And, because I do a lot of driving for work, so I'll be able to drive past here. Oh man, there's a fuck ton of ducks right there. There's a piss pile of geese right there, you know? I'm fortunate enough to be able to see that. Where I'm not just cooped up in a shop all day. I have my days where we're in the shop all day, not doing nothing or not going out doing stuff. But for the most part, we get to get out every day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I generally go goose hunt, duck hunt of a morning. Goose is my bread and butter. I'd rather go goose hunt than ducks, hands down. A lot of people think I'm crazy for that, but that's what I like. And literally, I would go goose hunt in the morning, depending on the weather. You know, if it was cold, they were flying in the afternoon. But I would you know, scout when I went hunting. I was in the truck. I'd hate to know. I had an old F-250 V10, and I'd hate to know how many gallons of fuel I burnt a day.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I find hard to scouting is because, so I'll hunt Saturday morning. If we have a good morning, then I'll go back and hunt the same place Sunday. But if we don't, then we're out scouting. We're trying to figure out, hey, where do we go tomorrow? And then during the week, I don't have time to scout because, you know, it's time I get off. It's 40 minutes to the closest place to hunt. And if I want to go to my real good places and I'm driving a little ways, it's going to be dark. And it's, well, do we go here or what do we do, you know? So I've kind of learned to look at my surroundings on stuff. Like part of that when I'm out driving for work, okay, if I see ducks at this place, I know there's normally ducks at this place, so we can go to this place and wear them out in the morning, you know, or something similar to that.
Right, and that's – and public here's got so hard to draw in. I know last – I didn't hunt – I had to go hunt public one time this year. I don't remember if we poor lined or how we got in, but that's besides the fact. But last year, I think they was hunting like – opening day was – I think it was under 10 spots, and there was still like 100 parties to draw up. So you had a 10% chance of drawing in. And that's our public here is just so crazy. And I was just talking to Josh Peck with Outdoor Limits yesterday, or no, Friday. He came and picked up a new boat at the shop. And he said Kansas just changed a bunch of that. If you're from out of state, that now you can only hunt on certain days, I think he said, like, say, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday or something, is the only days public land is open to non-residents. Which,
oh, I didn't know they had changed that. I know they were talking about changing it. I think the days are Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
Yeah, I know it's something different. And I wish Missouri would do some stuff like that because we just – our conservation department puts their hand out and take any dollar they can get from anybody across the nation. I ain't talking about on the conservation, but, you know, they want them here. And they're doing a good job getting them here. I can tell you that because them draw rooms are packed every morning.
I tell you what, we don't have the draw stuff here that I know of anywhere, but there are places here that you can go on any given day, whether it be Saturday, Wednesday, Friday, whatever. You can go any given day to hunt a couple of these places, and there's nothing but out-of-state tags in the parking lot. It's like that every week. And then there's times, there's a couple of places we hunt here that we're pretty good about not running into a whole hell of a lot of people. But there was one spot that was money for us last year, and we'd never seen more than one or two other people out there. And it's a big area. And, I was scouting one day and drove down this road. There were 8 to 12 cars there. Every one of them had tags from Georgia, South Carolina. And then there was another time where a buddy of mine was hunting down there, and he said that there were some guys from Louisiana hunting there. And they would go in, shoot a limit, go out to the truck, pick another group of guys up, go back in, shoot more birds, go back out, pick more guys up. I'm like, that's just ridiculous. Like, we got to do something about that stuff because you get people, and I'm sure it's like this here as well as everywhere else with decent hunting. You get people that come in and they want to fucking ruin everything. Like, not that they want to ruin everything, but they want to go in and just burn it down constantly. And then that screws it up for everybody else because those birds get so wary of that, you know, where they might be roosting here and have been using this spot to feed or loaf or whatever. Well, all of a sudden, they're 4 counties over because they've been getting the shit shot out of them for 4 days.
Yeah, which I will say, that's like I was saying earlier with the all of our – majority of our spots here are pit blinds is what the conservation puts in for us to hunt. That's what you're drawing for. And they don't take long. You know, say we get a new – push of birds, a few days, they've got figured out where those mounds are.
Oh, yeah. But
it's funny. You can watch them fly right up the boat lane, dodging everyone.
Mm-hmm. There's, we went to Arkansas a couple of years ago, and I ain't going to talk too much about it. I ain't going to drop no names, but I did get into a little bit of a fuck you type match with a guy on Facebook a couple weeks ago about it. Talking about, oh, well, you just want shit to be handed to you, this and that. And I'm like, I'm not that guy. But we went out there between 18 people, and 2 days we shot one duck. And you could watch the geese in these fields where they would come up. The geese would come up out of these fields around you, and they'd start flying towards where your blind is. And they'd go way, way, way wide and way high. And they'd get past your blind 300 yards. They'd come back down, and they'd come back together. Yep. And it's like, yeah, okay. Y'all are just fucking folks, you know.
Yeah. Like I said, I can't bash out-of-state hunters because I travel to hunt. So, you know, at some point, I'm an out-of-state hunter too. So, nothing to them. I get it. They're there for – don't get me wrong. If you're going somewhere to kill birds, you know – you say you're coming to Missouri, or you're going to South Dakota, or wherever. You're going there to kill birds.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's what they're doing. I mean, you can't hate on them. Does it piss you off? Yes, because, you know, that's – I guess I kind of am selfish and look at it, you know, this is my – our conservation area, you know. This is Missouri, this is our conservation area, you know, and you coming out here, you know, banging, sky blasting at whatever duck, you know, flies over within 80 yards.
Well, that's the stuff that pisses me off is I don't guess it's necessarily a I hate out-of-state hunters thing because I know what you're there for. You know, we're all there for the same thing. But at the same time, like, you see these guys that go out there and just do this dumb shit, and it pisses me off, and it turns me off from out-of-state hunters. It's like, damn, I wouldn't care if they never let out-of-state hunters hunt here again after seeing some shit. You know, like, these guys will sit and hell call birds. Just constant all day, you know, they'll shoot at everything that comes in 100 yards. They won't work birds. I'm like, okay, that's that shit that really pisses me off, you know.
Yeah, like I said, I can't blame any of it on out of state, because I see locals here do it, and there's a lot of times I'll tell the locals, like, hey, why didn't you let that group work? And like, well, they're just not working. I'm like, well, give them a chance to work, you know, like,
right.
They're like, well, they circled three times, and we weren't going to let them get out. Well, let them get out. They're going to finish somewhere. It may not be your blind, but, you know, they're looking to get down. They're wanting to get down. So, okay, they didn't pick your spread. Maybe they didn't like something. Maybe you moved. I don't know what happened, but don't – okay, they've swung three times. We're going to stand up and hope we kill one. Just
– yeah.
Count your loss. There'll be another group come over. So
– we've had them to where they'll circle – 8, 10, 12 times before they want to give it up. But if they're working, we're gonna keep working them until they don't, you know?
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't understand. They want to go 3 passes and then shoot, which some places that might work. That might be the case. But, like, everywhere's not like that, you know? If the birds are working, let them work. They're either going to figure out, oh, I want in there, or they're going to say, oh, I don't want in there, and they're going to fuck off, you know? But if they won't in there, they're going to get down in there eventually.
Right. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen that where they circle and they circle and they circle and they circle. All it takes is one bird out of a group. Once that first bird breaks off and starts coming down, I promise you the rest are coming with them.
Yep. And you just got to get one to commit.
Yep. As soon as he breaks off, here comes all 12 of them, you know.
Yep.
And a lot of folks just, I don't know, are greedy. I don't know if that's the right word, but want to rush shit. But, like, give it a break, guys. Let these birds do what they do, and they'll get down in there.
Yeah. And I don't think our hunting here is near what it used to be. I don't know if the flyways changed, if it's just staying, which we've been pretty abnormally warm. So, I'm probably getting the birds we should. It's crazy here. I don't know about there in Kansas where you're at, but we'll go from hot to literally froze up. And when I say froze, I mean everything. Your big water might have only a couple inches of ice, but our small farm pond stuff, they got 6-8 inches of ice. We go from hot to froze.
And that's how it was here this year.
Yeah, that's about how our last two seasons went. So you'll see, you know, when you finally do get to push the birds, they fly right on over. There's nowhere for them to go.
Right.
So they keep on keeping on.
One of the power plant lakes here, you know, they've got that warm water outlet.
Yeah.
And I never see a whole terrible lot of people hunting there. You know, maybe one or two other guys. Everything froze up this year, and I got the wild hair. I'm going to go down there Saturday morning, scout, see what it's looking like, see if there's even any birds there. And I got down there in that warm water outlet. There was, I think I counted 30 trucks, something like that.
Oh,
it's
God.
Just absolutely ridiculous. I'm like, no, this is crazy. If I'm going to hunt, I'm going to be here in the morning. I'll get here at 1 o'clock, and if anybody wants to come in on me, they can fuck themselves.
Well, see, and that's the thing that is kind of nice about our draw is I don't got to go at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, like you do your public walk-in. I mean, there's where you're at, there's guys camping for mm-hmm. just to beat somebody to their spot. Here we draw. Yeah, the draw's, you know, 4 o'clock or whatever. You don't draw in. You get to go back home and go to bed. If you do, it's, you know, that's your spot. Nobody's going to beat you to it.
I don't see a whole lot of folks camping here. It seems like – so I always make it a point to get out early, get my hole. I know where I want to be at, and I'm going to get there, and I'm going to get my hole. And if somebody else happens to be there before me, then okay, they got lucky. But most of the time, there's not anybody camping. The thing here is I'll get out there at 2:30, 3 o'clock, and I'll get in my hole. And I'll turn lights off, put decoys out, and I'll just sit back and shut the hell up, you know. And other guys will come walking in. You'll start seeing guys about 4:30 start coming in. And they'll do that all the way up until daylight. And it's like, man, it's, you know, 5 minutes till shooting light, and you're just now walking in the marsh. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What?
That's like I was saying, the other nice thing about that draw is – a lot of these birds here, they'll get pressure because everybody thinks you got to be out there at first light. So I'll go draw, go back home, go to work, do whatever. And noon comes around, I'll finally hook the boats up and go over there and hunt the evening. And the evenings here can be just as good. You know, it just sucks. Instead of setting out in the dark, you're picking up in the dark, which seems to be more of a chore. It's easy to pull the decoys out of the boat, kind of a chore to put them back in. But I've had a lot of really good hunts in the afternoon.
We've had a few.
You know, I'd almost rather do that way. I can come home, go back to bed for a while, or I go right to the shop and, you know, get done what I can get done before I go. Like I said, I don't get to hunt much anymore, but there's been days that that's how I do it. And the evenings can be just as banger, if not better, because they have been, you know, there's 40 blinds over there. Everybody hunts from sunrise to 10, 11, noon, you know, maybe 1, 2 o'clock, and they decide they're hungry and they're going to eat lunch, and they eat lunch and they're fat and sassy, so they go on home. Well, you start motoring in at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, or, you know, while they're doing their shuffling around, you want to be motoring in as they're coming out. So you go in, and while all the other commotion's going on, you set out your spread. And everybody else is gone, and you pretty well got the whole place to yourself. You know, there might be another 3 or 4 out of the 40 left, but, you know, you're limited. You're 1 of 5, not 1 of 40 at that point.
Right. And I don't know. Sometimes I feel like the evenings here are onesies and twosies. Like you might go out and shoot, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 birds in the evening, or you might not. And I guess that's really the thing. I don't do a whole lot of, like, preparation for evening hunts. You know what I mean? Most of my hunts, I start out in the morning, and sometimes they go all day, but most times they go till 1, 2 o'clock, and then we call it. But it seems like as the later the day gets, the more they stop flying, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think these birds here get so pressured of a morning. It's like I was saying, how they learn how where the blinds are. They learn to wait till it's funny. So we got like our walk-ins, you can hunt till 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the blinds, you can hunt till sunset, till shooting time. And those walk-ins, you go into some of the walk-ins, it'd be 1 o'clock on the dot. Those birds will get up and start coming off the refuge.
Oh, absolutely. There was one time we went this year. We hunted the morning in this one place, and then we trekked nearly 2 hours to finish the day in this other place. And we saw three birds probably from noon up until end of shooting light. And we're walking out. You know, it's almost dark, but it's not quite dark. Shooting light's over, though. And you're just seeing birds by the thousands flying around in this marsh. And it's like, man, I'm having teal land 15 feet from me.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude. They figure it out to the minute. And I don't know how, but their internal clock is amazing.
I think them some bitches are smarter than we give them credit for.
Oh, by far.
You know, everybody talks about a little pea-sized brain or whatever, but them they got it figured out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think I would figure a lot of things out real quick if somebody was shooting at me, too.
Oh, you damn right. Hell. One more thing I want to talk about. Man, these hats you're making, they're pretty slick. I've been wearing one of these you gave me since I come up and seen you a couple weeks ago. When the hell did you start making hats and stuff?
So, I bought a laser engraver to be able to put the leather tags on my lanyards. So, whether it be for JT calls, hooked and tagged, you know, Ma Paw's archery shop, you know, whoever's, you know, buying them off me, I can put their logo on them and let them brand themselves versus buying it with the C4L logo on it. So I bought it to do that. Well, and then I wanted to get shirts for – well, I bought hats and shirts for the paracord company. And I was like, well, how I got this laser engraver, I can, you know – and originally I was just buying leather before they had this new press-on stuff. I was buying leather and gluing it to the hat. And then I did some. I riveted on. It's kind of a – I did it, I guess – really before you saw leather hats. I used to have little C4L ones that had a riveted on, literally a tag off my lanyard. It was the same oval shaped tag, and I riveted it on a hat, and I sold the shit out of hats. Just little leather patch hats that were riveted on, and I don't know how many I sold, and that was really some of the first leather hats you've seen. And I got them out there, and then I got to make them for a bunch of bigger companies just with the little riveted on tags. And now, you know, they've got all this cool DIY heat press on leather stuff. You know, anybody with a laser engraver can do it, but, it was more just kind of for myself. And I was like, well, I got it. I might as well make some money off of it.
Right.
You know, or at least get some money back on my investment, even though I was on the lanyards. But, you know, if I can do it for other people, the door's already open. Might as well walk through it. So.
Yeah, I tell you what, they're pretty slick. You did a damn fine job putting the patches on and stuff. And like I say, I've been wearing this one pretty well every day. So, and I've been seeing you, you've been making more of them here lately. I've been seeing you more
posts
of them on Facebook. So
it's growing. I never really advertised it or pushed it. And I ran some ads on Facebook, and they've been busy. It's one more thing I need to do, I guess, but, you know, I get home and, it's like I said, I never know when I'm going to leave the shop, but it's not like the work ends. I get home and I've got dozens of lanyards to still make right now. Especially I got one sitting here on the floor in front of me that I'm working on getting finished for hooked and tagged. And, I got to get their order shipped out Monday. So I'm working on finishing their work. Here it is Sunday at, 3:30 in the afternoon, and I'm still working. So, like I said, I don't have no days that I don't do something. It may be only a couple hours of work, but I don't think there's a day that goes by that I don't work. And I guess that's something maybe I should or shouldn't be proud of. You can look at it both ways.
Right. One way you look at it, well, if I stay busy, the money keeps rolling in. But the other way you look at it, bam, I work every day, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's right. Right now, I'm itching for the kids to get home. They had a church and then a baby shower. I went to I did turkey hunt this morning, so I missed church this morning, and they went to church and had a baby shower for a friend of ours, and they should be getting home anytime. So I may put it's kind of windy, but I may put stuff up and see if they want to go play outside, or we may see what we're doing this afternoon yet. I do try to make time for them on the weekends. Mind you, yesterday I did work at the shop, so.
Right. Yeah, hell yeah. I was thinking about going out after some turkeys this afternoon, but as cold as it was this morning, I just kind of said hell with it.
Well, they hammered this morning. It was one of the better mornings as far as I was concerned on hearing gobbles. Like I said, I just bought a tag and went last night. It was the first night of me going and this morning, but they hammered this morning, so I was glad to be out there. I didn't kill nothing, but they were going crazy on the roost for sure.
Just still get out there and have a good time, though.
Yep, I'm right back to work, so I got a little me time. Some of my inner steam's gone, I guess.
Shit, well, so you're pretty well making everything. Your boat's affordable for everybody. You know,
try to be as affordable as I can. To today's economy, it's hard to be reasonable and be able to afford my own bills too, along with the company's bills and just everything.
So. Yeah, I know the last couple of years I've watched the prices on everything from gas to groceries to everything in between just skyrocketing. I know for a lot of folks, it's hard to, like folks that make stuff like yourself, it's hard for folks to stay in that range of affordable, but, you know, it's nice to see when people can keep a good thing going, you know what I mean? Stay as affordable as you can, as opposed to just trying to gouge the shit out of everybody.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, I'm not getting rich off of it. I pay my bills, and that's about it. Keep everything afloat and try to keep everything moving.
So yeah, hell yeah, that's what it's about, ain't it?
Yeah. I dream of a private jet, but I don't think I'll ever see it. So.
No, I think that makes two of us. I might see one flying through the air, but I won't ever have one.
That's what I live literally when you was up here. I don't know if you noticed or not, the airport's straight out the end of my driveway. Our little local airport. And, man, you would not believe. So Habitat Flats is not far from me. And you would not believe the jets that come in here during their duck season. It is unreal, the money that flies in and out of this airport. Like, just a minute ago, we were sitting here talking just a minute ago, there was probably a 12-passenger jet landed. Now, that's not a huge jet by no means, but I couldn't afford a one-passenger jet, so.
Right. You want a one-passenger jet? Well, go out to one of these farms that they got old Cessna that burnt down, and maybe you can get that.
The only plane I'm ever going to own is going to be made of paper, I can tell you that.
I tell you what, though, it's good to dream. And like I say, it's nice to see that you're keeping everything as affordable as you can, and that you're still making a quality product when you could be outsourcing, you know, going to some factory in Taiwan or Japan or something. You're still keeping things local and building everything by hand. A lot of folks love to see that, myself included.
And like I said, it does slow our turnaround times down. It does, you know, it plays a role on things. I probably ain't selling stuff as cheap as I could because, say, I'm paying $7 for it to come from China. I'm spending probably, you know, 10 times at least here.
Right.
You know, our covers and doors are made right here in the shop. I'm buying the fabric. I got the ladies that, you know, they cut it, they sew it. And that's also a pro and con. Is the con, we may not have the fast turnaround time because they get backlogged. But the plus side is a lot of things don't get messed up. But if it is, you send it back. I will get you a return label. You send it back and they will fix it right there. Like, say you get a cover that maybe some of the stubble straps didn't get sewn on or something, or maybe you've had one for 3-4 years and the thread's starting to tear on the seam or something. send it back. I'll send you a return label. Send it back. They'll sew it back up. We'll mail it back out to you. And that's another thing. I'm a pretty big stickler on, you know, I'm still servicing boats. I shouldn't say I'm servicing, but, you know, if you bought a boat, a Four Rivers boat anytime in the past, you have an issue, I'll send you a repair kit, gel coat, anything free of charge. The only thing I ask is you send me a picture of the boat and the damage, because I don't want you owning a Joe Blow's boat that's has an issue, and you know Four Rivers can take care of their customers. I don't want to be sending you repair kits for some other guy's product. You know, if he wants to build a product and you bought his product, he should stand behind it. So I do ask, you know, if somebody does have an issue, they got to send me a picture of their boat with the concerned area, you know, in the photo. So I know that it is a Four Rivers that's messed up and not some random boat.
Well, I don't think that's too much to ask for, you know what I mean? Because right. There are a lot of folks out there that are trying to screw you over. Oh, man, well, I can get stuff to fix this for free. All I got to do is call them. Well, it ain't going to be quite that easy. So that's a good way to be, you know?
Yeah. And even if you do have competitors, I'll help you out. I've done it. I found people on, like the layout and sneak boat page or some of the duck boat forums that are still out there online, you know, needing help. Hey, where can I get this or that? Hey, shoot me a text. I'm busy at the moment, but shoot me a text. And as soon as I can, I can get your info. And I'm willing to help people. I mean, I don't care. I ain't going to be stingy. It may not be my boat, but if you had a leaking boat, it ain't a damn good boat, so we got to fix it.
Absolutely.
But
leaking boats ain't no good.
Leaking boat's a sinking boat. We don't.
That's right. Well, it's nice having you on. I appreciate you coming on and appreciate you sponsoring me.
Hey, no problem. Hopefully we can find time to get together before you all have the birth of the child. So I know my days are limited, but maybe we can find when do you all do again?
End of July.
We better get on it then. Time is
limited. Oh, yeah. We'll make something happen here. Should be fishing. Get out fishing here soon with the weather getting warm. I think after this little cold front, it's supposed to stay warm. So crappie should start biting.
Yeah, I know they've been catching them here quite a bit. Like you were saying, we got a reservoir that has a power plant on it, and they got a warm arm or warm leg, whatever you call it, and that they catch fish pretty well all year, crappie and striped bass, stuff out of it all winter. So, but
yeah, I got the itch for it, so hopefully here before too long, and then we'll get together and get on some or do something. Shit.
Hell, you catch the fish, I'll cook them. How about that? Because I don't have to fish, but I can probably find 6-7 minutes to cook some fish.
I tell you what, we can go out and catch them and have a good old fish fry.
There you go. Nothing like a classic fish fry.
Oh, you know I'm right. Get up there and get pish or drunk.
Well, you got to contain yourself now.
Well.
You got to learn, bud. You just said July. You got 3 months to learn how to control yourself, Bubbles.
Still got to have a little bit of fun. I mean, hell.
I get it. Well, I'm going to work on. I got a handful of lanyards here to finish up for the Hooked and Tag Company, and I'm guessing the wife's on the way home, or she has something for me to do, so I need to call her back. But no, that's let's try to get together sometime. I would like to get Tom on here. Surely this thing will let us have a 3-way conversation, I'm guessing, or no?
I think it will. I think, yeah, I got a little button I can press to add more people here, so.
All right, folks. Well, we's finally able to tie old Brock down from Four Rivers Layout Boats. Hopefully, we can catch up with him here pretty soon. Before I get off this here episode, got to give a shout out to the Clio boys at Owens Corning in Savannah, Georgia. Hey, appreciate y'all listening and sharing me around your plant at work. Hope y'all enjoyed this here episode half as much as we enjoyed sitting down making it for you. Y'all be sure to rate this thing and review it wherever you listen to your podcast at. Also, be sure to check out my sponsor, Four Rivers Layout Boats, at fourriverslayoutboats.com for a handmade quality product. Hey, if you're going to get one, You better get to them now before they get too busy and the wait times get pushed out too far. Also, y'all check out BMIFirearms.com. Use code BUBBLES5 at checkout. Check out CombatWaterfowl.com. Use code JSnyder at checkout. SX Decoys and Drake Waterfowl, y'all know where it's at, son. I'm telling you, look, all these things I done talked about in here, they make me feel like Michael Jackson. Hee hee. All right, appreciate y'all.